Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Happy Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. We spent hours zipping around between street festivals, spring festivals here in the Metro Atlanta area. Great weather. Never rains here anymore, thanks to that damn Al Gore and his global climate change claptrap. It's been a real sunny, pollen-clouded spring down here, and here in Georgia, we have massive forest fires going on. That's, Harry Reid must be crazy. He says we've lost, Harry Reid, who says we lost the war in Iraq, must be crazy. He's got to be. Because as we're getting ready to go on the air tonight, another 9 U.S. soldiers killed in a suicide car bomb. 20 other U.S. troops and 1 Iraqi were wounded in the attack. And earlier today, insurgents targeted restaurants, Iraqi police patrols, a Kurdish political office, and a Sunni mosque in a string of attacks that left at least 49 Iraqis dead, 9 Americans, 20 wounded. And Harry Reid is being pilloried by the usual scum-sucking right-wingers because he states the obvious, the war's over. It's just a question of how many more Americans we want to die. From an American point of view, the Iraqis have an awful lot of blood in this card game, too. But from this point on, it's just how many more Americans do we want to die? Apparently, we wanted 9 to die today. Whatever the death toll is tomorrow of American soldiers, that's the number we want to die tomorrow. The hell of this is, we never know until the end of the day how many Americans we wanted to die in this civil war in Iraq. That's one of the variables of war. You don't know until the day's over how many people died that day. You see what I'm saying? Of course you do. So, Harry Reid states the obvious, and the Bush crime family states the insane. That somehow Harry Reid is failing the troops or doing something awful and vile and hateful and dark and ugly because he states the absolute truth. So it's very clear we have not yet reached the point where we're no longer willing to sacrifice young Americans in this horror of George Bush's. So I'm just curious. I wonder how many more will want to die before this is over, and how many more we will want to come back with their arms and or legs blown off, or severe cases of post-traumatic stress disorder, or whatever mental illnesses can be picked up in a situation such as the one our military has been thrust. But, according to Bush and his thugs, we're succeeding in Iraq. Maybe they should forget about walling off sections of Baghdad and just wall off the White House. That would make us all a lot safer, wouldn't it? Keep the gibbering maniacs inside the asylum. I know I'd sleep better tonight. Anyway, as promised last week, we have more on sounds of poppin' on the program tonight from Chuckle Nuts' comedy special at Tip City High School in Ohio last Thursday. We have some soon-to-be classic Bush speak, so don't miss it. You're not going to believe what this nutball says while death and destruction on a massive scale just rocks along. These people don't care. They really don't. Also, we have a more sober yet still delusional Bush today reiterating his unwavering support for his little Mexican sidekick, Abu Gonzalez. In fact, Bush said that today that he supports him even more now after his testimony. That shouldn't be a shock because Bush lives on lies. He's like Limbaugh and Savage and Bortz and Hannity and the rest of these thugs. They nurse at the teat of lies. That's where they get their sustenance. Lies, deception. I guess Bush is tired of being regarded as the most ignorant and inept politician in Washington, and he hopes Torture Boy here will carry that mantle for a while. I love him. I really love him. Finally, we're totally going to play some radical clips from Speedy Perino doing her best to play whack-a-mole. Her words, she's going to play whack-a-mole tonight with Harry Reid. Whack-a-mole. So stick around. God. I don't know. I was in a fairly jovial mood because, like most of you, I have the ability to set horror behind me. You know, as it rolls over me, I tend to say, okay, that's horrifying, and then set it aside. And try to do something other than, I try to channel Stephanie Miller. You know, what would Steph say? How can I be funny? How can I do something, that is not... The beginning of this program is starting to sound more and more like the beginning of your nightly news, at least here in Atlanta. All it is a police blotter. You know, this one died and that one had his head smashed in and this one, oh my God, it just goes on and on. But almost pulled it off tonight, and then the news came in about 9 more soldiers in a suicide bombing. And that's on top of the news that David Halberstam, I know some say Halberstam, the Pulitzer Prize winning author who wrote about the Vietnam War generation and wrote about Vietnam, was killed in a car wreck sometime this afternoon, Eastern Time, just south of San Francisco. He won a Pulitzer at age 30, way back in 1964, for his reporting from Vietnam. And, of course, I'm sure you heard the Boris Yeltsin, the one who dismantled the Soviet Union. I know the right-wing mouth breathers in this country like to credit Ronnie Reagan, but, let's credit Walt Disney. You know, that makes as much sense. It was Boris Yeltsin who finally brought it all down. And I guess there is a little comic relief. Karl Rove getting losing his whatever shreds of decorum he has left with Lori David and Sheryl Crow at this White House Correspondents' Dinner. You know, what is up with that anymore? These dinners where all these pigs and piglets get together, not that Sheryl Crow and Lori David are. No, of course not. But they're not White House correspondents either, are they? And Karl Rove was invited by the New York Times. So you know damn good and well why they invited him. Oh, let's put Karl Rove in this situation and see if he explodes. Well, he exploded. He exploded. Can you imagine? I don't know about you, Truth Seeker, and I guess for the most part this is addressed to males in the audience, and maybe not, maybe females. Jesus, I don't even know anymore. But if Sheryl Crow and Lori David walked up to me and wanted to strike up a conversation, I would not say, "Don't touch me!" That's what he said. What a freak. Lori David described what happened. They were at this White House Correspondents' Dinner. They saw Rove, went over to him, and asked if he would consider taking a fresh look at the science of global warming. Now, see right there, Lori David, the eternal optimist, I guess, or something. But anyway, she writes, "Much to our dismay, he immediately got combative, and it went downhill from there. We reminded the senior White House advisor that the U.S. leads the world in global warming, pollution, and we are doing the least about it. Anger flaring, Mr. Rove immediately regurgitated the official administration position on global warming, which is that the U.S. spends more on researching the causes than any other country, blah, 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 blah. In his attempt to dismiss us, Mr. Rove turned to head toward his table. But as soon as he did so, Sheryl reached out to touch his arm. Karl swung around and spat, 'Don't touch me!' How hardened and removed from reality must a person be to refuse to be touched by Sheryl Crow? Unfazed, Sheryl abruptly responded, 'You can't speak to us like that. You work for us.' Carl then quipped, "I don't work for you, I work for the American people." To which Cheryl promptly reminded him, "We are the American people." I just wish that they would have unleashed a string of just vile, sexually loaded profanity, which would have had the tendency to cause Carl to run screaming from the room with his Depends just flapping in the breeze, don't you think? You've got to admit it at this point in time that it's clear the future looks bright.
The globe is warming.
Past the hour, two of the worst people in America, Karl Rove and Rush Limbaugh, have now laid the blame of the shooting at Virginia Tech on liberals. Both of these pigs have been doing that for years. Back in 1999, the shootings at Columbine High School in Colorado, Gingrich blamed that on liberals, too. Here's what he said back then. Quote, "I want to say to the elite of this country, the elite news media, the liberal academic elite, the liberal political elite, I accuse you in Littleton of being afraid to talk about the mess you've made, of being afraid to take responsibility for things you have done, and instead foisting upon the rest of us pathetic banalities because you don't have the courage to look at the world you have created." End quote. You know, that's the kind of talk that I don't know about you, but for me, it makes me think, you know, as soon as the lights go out, I'm going to find this son of a bitch and have a chat with him. You know what I'm saying? And on the other hand, a little voice inside me says, Mike, this is a dead flesh eater, a carrion eater. Forget about it. The guy's a vulture. Just, he doesn't exist. I get torn between those two points of view. You know what I'm saying? On ABC's This Week, Sunday, Judas Stephanopoulos asked Gingrich if he would apply the same words to the Virginia Tech tragedy. And Gingrich answered yes. According to Think Progress, he answered yes, offering a rambling, nonsensical response that segued into Don Imus and McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform. Jesus God. This guy, why? How is it possible that one party or one ideological vein in this country produces such madmen? I mean, just complete psychopaths over and over and over again. It's like they have DNA genetic material, I should say, that just doesn't match the rest of us at all. It's astonishing. Now, I remember back in 94 when Gingrich was leading the so-called Republican Revolution. What did that last? 13 years? And there was a horrendous case down here. Susan Smith, a young woman over in South Carolina, not very educated. She worked in a factory as a receptionist. And she had a boyfriend. She was married, but she also had a boyfriend. And one day, her two children were in the back seat of the car. The car slid into a lake, and the two kids drowned. Well, as it turned out, Susan Smith murdered them. She, her boyfriend had led her to believe, or she believed it all on her own, that the boyfriend would be more interested in her if she got rid of her children and then got rid of her husband. That's real sick. It's crazy stuff. So she let the car... She drove to a lake and put the car in gear and let it go into the lake, and these two precious little children drowned. Well, Gingrich couldn't wait to blame that on liberals, to say it was, just horrifying. But then it turned out that Susan Smith had been molested by her stepfather ever since she'd been about 8 or 9 years old, up until the time she was able to get away from the bastard when she was 16 or 17. She had been sexually penetrated, raped, abused, molested by this guy. Who was the guy? He was on the board of directors of the Christian Coalition of South Carolina, and he was on the board of the Republican State Committee in South Carolina. You know, a good Christian conservative Republican. Now, did Gingrich come out and apologize for his filthy words? No, of course not. Why should he? Nobody cares. How many people know that Susan Smith was raped by a board member of the South Carolina Christian Coalition? How many people care? And it doesn't justify the murder of her children, but it's part of the story. How many people care that that evil son of a bitch that raped her was not just a Christian, but also a Republican stalwart in the state of South Carolina? But it doesn't matter to Gingrich. It doesn't matter to Gingrich. Now, Limbaugh couldn't wait to get on the air. When was it? On the 19th. What's the day? The 23rd? So on the April 19th broadcast of the Limbaugh program, he said, quote, "If this Virginia Tech shooter had an ideology, what do you think it was? This guy had to be a liberal. You start railing against the rich and all this other, this guy's a liberal. He was turned into a liberal somewhere along the line, so it's a liberal that committed this act." And I'm sure that the pig, Michael Savage, probably said the same thing. I don't know. I just think people like this should be denied citizenship in this country, like Limbaugh and Gingrich, and put on an island someplace where they can just spend all their time hating each other. You know what I'm saying?
Determined to put the mock into democracy. Decisions they're making are much too big for you or me. So, facing the tide of negative news, liberal lies, and left-leaning views that our enemies would spread.
Manipulating statements, exaggerating truth. I can't believe they hate my show. It's fire. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm concentrated pile of human waste. You're being scammed.
That song was put together with actual words out of the mouth of this pig by some morning disc jockeys here at 99X, I believe, in Atlanta. They several years ago, they did an excellent job. 25 before the hour. Now, this kind of ties in with the filth that Limbaugh and Newt and the rest of these people put out there, Michael Savage and even the baby Jesus, Sean Hannity, jumps into it every once in a while. I got this from Raw Story. After posting his resume at an online job site, careerbuilder.com, this guy, Corey Andrew, got a contact by an Army recruiter about a job. Here are some of the exchanges that went between Sergeant Marcia Ramode, who is the recruiter, and Corey Andrew, who is a guy that just put his resume up on a website. Ramode is the Army recruiter. Now, she wrote first, Sergeant Ramode. "My name is Marcia Ramode. I'm a United States Army recruiter. I saw your resume on CareerBuilder, and we have lots of vacant positions in logistics administration. If interested, please give me a call at my toll-free number." Andrew: "Awesome. Sounds great. The U.S. military has so many vacant positions and opportunities. I had no idea. I'm seriously considering contacting you. One thing, I'm not up on current politics, but since it's 2007, I would imagine also that I am now able to serve in the U.S. military as an openly gay man, right?" Sergeant Ramode: "Well, if you're gay, we don't take you. You're considered unqualified." Andrew: "Wow, unqualified to serve my country because I'm gay? It's because they think I might all of a sudden desire one last kiss from my fellow male soldier if ever facing death at the hands of the enemy in a foxhole? Funny, the U.S. government doesn't mind taking my gay dollars every tax season or out of my paycheck every 2 weeks. I'm stunned that the U.S. Army could afford to be so choosy when I see sergeants on my school campus and in the local shopping mall begging teenagers to enlist. Sergeant Ramode, and this is in all caps. You are definitely unqualified. Now take you gay self someplace else. We do not tolerate gay people like you in any part of the military. And if it bothers you paying taxes, then migrate to another country. And if it bothers you about the U.S. military recruiting, then you go tell the Board of Education. And if you don't like the recruiters recruiting in front you high school, then complain to the President of the United States. Or better yet, try complaining to Mayor Bloomberg and see what he has to say. You should say thank you, military people, for what you do so that you can live a free life in this country. Freedom is not free. Andrew, before you go on waving your flag all over the place, let me first inform you that as an African-American whose ancestry is most likely more deeply rooted in American history than yours will ever be, I respect the millions of soldiers fighting to protect my rights every day. But just so you know, those rights include my being gay. I applaud servicemen and women every day for their role in our country's protection. However, for you and the government to deem homosexuals unqualified to risk their lives and defend their freedom as well as the country's freedom is moronic. Sergeant Ramode, all caps. Oh, I forgot to let you know that yes, you might to try to kiss a soldier in the foxhole, so that is a no-no. Andrew. You are living proof that don't ask, don't tell is a fallacy. You initially rejected me without any consideration whatsoever of my integrity or abilities. This behavior is at the very core of the discrimination that has plagued the USA for decades. You should know that I never had any intention of joining the military. I simply wanted to have this discussion to prove a point. With over 2,500 cases of anti-gay harassment acts against gay soldiers, including bashings and murders, for you to say the U.S. military only takes straights is delusional. Sergeant Ramode, all caps. You head off to the gay land of people who have no morals and get rid of yourself. Personally, I think being gay is disgusting and immoral. As an African, have no place to say your roots are deeply rooted here. My roots are much stronger than yours. You were brought here being your willpower, whereas my roots run from the Native American Indian. I have more rights here than you, and my roots have been here ever since before the Americas were discovered. You take your gay ass off someplace and go to some other country and badmouth the military. Take your ass back where you belong, not here. Andrew. Clearly, with your limited vocabulary and poor spelling, the Army may have been the only option you had in life. Granted, there are highly intellectual people in the military. You're just not one of them. Native American history you are so proud of and research their position on homosexuality. They are very tolerant and accepting of homosexuals, believing that the inner spirit is true to itself and its nature. They are less tolerant of fools than they are of homosexuals. So take that to your next rain dance. Ramode, Sergeant Ramode. Go back! You go back to Africa and do your gay voodoo limbo tango and wango dance and jump around and prance and run all over the place half naked there and practice your gay morals over there. That's where you belong. I am reporting you as spam and adding you to my block sender list so I do not have to hear from you again. What do you want to bet, Sergeant Ramode? Just thinks the sun rises and sets in Rush Limbaugh's hip pocket, huh? Good God. Let's do a couple of phone calls. Oh, my God, who is this? MATCOM, our Bailey's Island Bureau Chief. Hey, Matt.
My brother, how are you?
Fine, I thought you died and went to Philadelphia.
Just trying to survive in George Bush's America, man. What is this I hear? Gays kissing gays in foxholes, freedom isn't free, and Michael Wiener is the baby Jesus?
No, Sean Hannity.
Oh, Sean Hannity, I'm sorry.
Well, now if I remember right, weren't you were in the Army, weren't you in a tank unit?
I was. I was an M1A1 tanker for 3 years in Germany on the Fulda Gap.
Oh, that's where the invasion was supposed to come, right?
Yeah,
what happened in the tanks? Were there ever any gay folk who would turn around and say, "Kiss me, you devil"?
Lots of pink lace and pumps.
Yeah, I'll bet.
What happened? Yeah, no.
Well, it's good to hear from you. Let me tell the audience, because a lot of people listen to this program and they go, "Jesus, who are these people?" Matthew was our bureau chief. I guess you still are. We didn't take back the certificate.
Well, I appreciate that.
From Bailey's Island, Massachusetts. Matt's
Bailey Island, Maine, but lived just out of Boston. Vacation up at Bailey Island.
Bailey Island. You were going to keep an eye on the lobstermen who were keeping an eye on the terrorists.
Yeah, John Ashcroft, one of John Ashcroft's first directives was to make sure that after 9/11, to make sure that we all kept tabs on the lobstermen, because the lobstermen were and still are, by the way, greatly unregulated in this country. So,
oh my God, there's no telling what could go on in a lobster boat. Right?
I'm better known as MatCom on Democratic Underground, and I had about 1,000 emails from last Friday. I guess you were reminiscing about our anti-war protest march in D.C. and
the night you and Will Pitt tried to kill me.
Well, to clarify, it was my scotch, but it was Will Pitt's pouring abilities.
Is that what it was? And it was my antihistamine. No, what was it? Decongestant. I don't know what the hell it was. This is so bizarre. You and I and 500,000 other people, we were just tiny little blips in there, but that's how we got to know each other. And Will, yep, and Ben Birch and a whole lot of people that showed up for that. Can you believe that we are now entering the fifth year, Matt?
No.
I mean, this is just astonishing.
No, and it gets worse every day. The only thing I will tell your new audience, and by the way, congratulations for your show on your new station. I've been following when I can, and I've talked to you over the years about my father.
Right.
My father, for those who don't know, was a lifelong Republican, retired CIA, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need to go into all of that.
No, but probably better if we don't.
Yeah, probably better if we don't.
Right.
But there have been a phenomenal group of people. I frequent Democratic Underground, and those are the people I know and my friends. And, you know, one by one, we've been able, my father included, we've been able to convert a lot of people just with information and facts. My father and my mother, who are now retired, voted straight Democratic ticket last time, and through the internet tubes, thanks to Ted Stevens, thank God they didn't get clogged. information is out there, and if you just present information to otherwise well-meaning people, even though they may be tainted and what have you, it does get through. And, you know, we just got to keep fighting. I mean, it's getting so damn tiresome, but
tell me about it. Well, I'm glad to hear that that it's a family affair now to try to educate people. Let me ask you something. I got an email here from a guy you probably don't know, but he said, "Tell Matt, Fiddler's Green and Scouts Out, he'll understand."
I do indeed.
Can you share that, or is it not something you want to say over the radio?
I'll let it stand the way it's written. Just thank him or her for me.
You do understand it.
I do, absolutely.
Damn. I wish I would have been in the tank corps so that I could understand what you guys are talking
about. No, there were a lot of cold days and nights in the Fulda Gap, and a lot of wild boars and a lot of poor meals and a lot of no heat, and you were better off being wherever the hell you were.
Okay. All right. I'll go along with that. Well, Matt, please don't wait 3 years to call again.
I won't, Mike.
All right.
And how is Kathy and the babies?
Kathy's doing great. She produces the show. And Molly is in July 22nd. She'll be 3.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Matt. Take care, pal.
Mike, hi to all the truth fakers, and thanks so much for what you do again, and I won't be a stranger.
All right. Take care. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
If people see anything suspicious, utility workers, lobstermen, went out there pulling their pots to get the lobsters, if they see something suspicious taking place along the main coast.
To make decisions. It's a job description where what do you do? It's decision maker.
That's a game that I hate to lose.
He's a decision maker. A little taste of what's coming next hour when we play some of his statements from Tip City, Ohio. For the 200th time, a man who spent years and years and years in prison, this time 25 years in prison for rape, was exonerated today. Judge threw out his conviction because DNA evidence showed he couldn't have committed the attack. Jerry Miller was the man who put 25 years into prison for something he didn't do. He had been found guilty of rape, robbery, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated battery, even though he testified he was at home watching television at the time of the attack in 1981. Now, he was paroled in March of 2006 and works two jobs and lives with a family member in a Chicago suburb. When he got the news today that he was no longer considered a convicted felon and had to register as a sex offender, he said, "I want to get on with my life, start a life. Have a life. I'm just thankful for this day." Now, this was another one from the Innocence Project, the New York-based group that had persuaded prosecutors last year to conduct DNA tests on a semen sample taken from the rape victim's clothes. The results excluded Jerry Miller as the attacker. This is the 200th case in the U.S. in which a person was convicted, then exonerated based on DNA evidence. All in all, the 200 defendants involved here served about 2,475 years in prison for crimes they didn't commit. And the deputy supervisor of Cook County, that's Chicago State's Attorney's Office, in the DNA review unit told the Chicago Tribune that this case was, quote, a good example of what the DNA unit was intended to do, end quote. Really? Well, since the ability to test for DNA is not something that just developed last week, it's amazing, isn't it? The first case where DNA was used to exonerate somebody was 1989. Take a look at the calendar, Mr. Prosecutor. This is 2007. And does it not make you or give you pause to think how many people are in prison who are innocent? Not guilty on a technicality. No. Innocent. Totally, completely innocent. What would you do? I've thought about this. If I were accused of something of which I was totally innocent, this is like the Kafka story, The Prisoner, and you were convicted and sent to prison, and you existed there year after year after year, knowing that you were completely innocent. How do you retain your sanity? That's the part that has always driven me right to the edge of my consciousness when I'm thinking about that. Somebody, and not just innocent people, but someone who is sentenced to 20 years in prison for having 100 pounds of marijuana in his basement or a bag of reefer in his car. You know, we still do sentence people to these incredible prison terms for having marijuana in their possession. It's strange. This is from a BuzzFlash news alert, an anonymous letter sent to the House and Senate Judiciary Chairman signed a group of concerned Department of Justice employees. Thanked Democrats for exposing, quote, the overtly political, close quote, firing of U.S. attorneys. The letter warned that the Justice Department was also politicizing the non-political ranks of justice employees. The letter claims that the traditional objective process of hiring top students from law school was being superseded by top officials. After mid-level employees painstakingly pored over applications and resumes to select the best candidates as usual, senior justice officials dramatically purged the final list in an unprecedented manner. The letter charges that, quote, most of those struck from the list had interned for a Capitol Hill Democrat, had clerked for a Democratic judge, or had worked for a so-called liberal cause, or otherwise appeared to have liberal leanings. Summa cum laude graduates of both Yale and Harvard were rejected. Summa cum laude, with highest praise. Yeah, the comparisons of Bush and his mobsters to Hitler is maybe true where one considers invading other countries, but this is a Soviet style bureaucracy and mendacity and banality and mediocrity and making political every single aspect of their inability to govern. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. And thanks to all the people who did not email me and say, Malloy, it's not the prisoner, it's the trial. I knew that. I wasn't sure if I said the prisoner or the trial. Nobody sent me an email. Maybe I said the trial. I don't know. But the Kafka novel I was referencing, of course, was the trial. The guy who wakes up. No, he didn't find himself. A cockroach that he wakes up to find he's been accused of a crime he didn't commit. And the horror of the story is it's a crime, the nature of which is never revealed to him. The trial. I was just, you know, when we went to commercial or went to the top of the hour, I thought, oh my God, did I say the, no. I was expecting, because this audience is, you know, too smart by half. Not that I don't appreciate it. This I just got. This is the only reason I bring this up. It's not just in the United States. It's also in Israel. It's always ultra Orthodox, isn't it? Whether they're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, it's always the ultra Orthodox. This is from the Jerusalem Post. Anti-gay protesters are suspected in a bombing, a bomb planted near a section of the security fence. Friday morning is suspected to be the work of anti-gay pride parade protesters, according to police. Several flyers condemning the parade, which is scheduled to take place in Jerusalem in June, were found in a vineyard near a monastery close to where the medium-sized bomb exploded. A nearby tractor driver was lightly wounded in the blast. There's now a special team investigating this. The parade was originally scheduled to take place last summer, but was canceled several times It was first pushed off to November due to the outbreak of the second Lebanon war in July, then because of the overwhelming threat of violence from anti-gay protesters, the event was reworked into a rally that was confined to the Hebrew University's Givat Ram campus. The bombing is just the latest in a series of ongoing threats from ultra-Orthodox Haredi Jews, I'm not familiar with that sect at all, against the gay community. Last November, after several days of rioting by the Haredim, organizers came to terms with Jerusalem officials and agreed to hold its Pride event not as a parade, but as a celebration within the confines of the stadium of Hebrew University. The event was one of the most tightly guarded in Israel's history. In October of last year, the Haredim, listen to this, blamed the war in Lebanon on the fact that Jerusalem's gay community wanted to hold a gay parade. In July, flyers were discovered in an ultra-Orthodox Haredi neighborhood which offered a monetary prize for killing gays. So, it's, I don't know how to comment on stuff like that. I just don't. That kind of focused sickness on a fellow human being, oh, never mind. You know my position on that. A few phone calls here before we go to Gonzalez. Very quickly, Jeff is calling from Santa Fe. Jeff, welcome to the program. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. Wait. Is it me?
I think it's you. Last time I checked, it was you.
I was listening to the radio. The phone connection is not so good. You were breaking up.
Well, that happens a lot.
Oh, well, it goes on. Hey, I'm really sorry I couldn't make it to your party last week.
It was a good time. We had an absolute blast.
I was so wanting to do it. But, of course, with the economy being what it is, I had to work the weekend.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Thank God it was a weekend, which allowed me to be off. But, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, oh, no, it's beautiful. Hey, I really wish you guys would, you and Kathy and Molly would come out to Santa Fe because we've got, like, the book tour thing going on now. Hartman's coming out and
Bill Press?
Well, Greg Palast is coming out,
yeah.
And it's like, wow, where's Malloy?
Well, I haven't finished the book yet, but it would be nice to come to Santa Fe. Believe it or not, I've never been to Santa Fe, and I'd love to come out there. It'll happen eventually.
Oh, you don't need a book. Just come out. We love you.
All right.
We love you. So, and I'm your sort of erstwhile kind of we're on the borderline of, can I be your bureau chief in Santa Fe? And then my lawyer said, don't talk to the left-wing radio anymore.
That's very true. That's a dangerous thing to do. I don't know. Is Jim Turr our bureau chief out there? I don't know.
Yeah, he is.
He is.
Well, I don't know if he's your bureau chief, but he definitely is out here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's out there all right.
Yeah, because I called you guys, oh, God, it was like 2 weeks after 2004 when I got my ass whooped by a right-wing Republican.
I remember, Jeff.
Yeah, and so my lawyer said, don't talk.
Yeah, don't talk.
Yeah, just don't do it because it could come back to haunt you.
That's right. There are enough right-wingers in New Mexico who would say, let's get Jeff.
Well, you know, turns out there really are. We're looking at the whole Iglesias thing.
How about that?
Huh? Well, you know, it's kind of amazing, isn't it?
I would think that everybody in New Mexico would be so... I don't want to use the term laid back, but I'll use it. Laid back that these Republicans, these right wingers, would just make people in Santa Fe or any city or town in New Mexico just yawn and say, "Oh God, go away."
You know, certain parts of New Mexico are very much like that, and other parts, you just kind of like grab onto the edge of your seat and drive through and go, please, God, let me make it through here. Don't let them look at my bumper stickers. Just let me get through.
There can't be any right-wingers in, for example, Taos, are there?
I think that there are probably a few lurkers.
Oh, my God.
I think it's something like 92% of Taos. Actually, I keep thinking about moving up there, but I hear it's not so easy to do business up there because it's so laid back. that you can't get anything done.
It'll be a great day when Republicans are all either have had their brains washed clean of this putrid disease called conservatism or Republicanism, or where they are all decide that there are too many immigrants, too many gays, too many people of color, too many liberals, too many Democrats, too many fun lovers, too many dope smokers, too many music lovers, too many ballet goers, too many theater goers, too many New Yorkers, Santa Feans, and San Franciscans, and they will all leave the United States and move to some island someplace and just revel in their madness. That'll be a grand day. Jeff, it's good to hear from you.
Well, good to hear from you, too. And one word of advice, Mike?
Sure.
Don't throw your guns in the river. I called last week to say, just don't do it.
Yeah, I know.
Think about it. Lock them up, but don't do that.
I hear you.
Take care, man.
All
good
right,
to
Jeff,
talk to you.
Appreciate your call. Take care. Yeah, I've kind of rethought what I said. I know, hate me, but...
Well, what if some irresponsible child or right-winger or Karl Rove or something found them and used them to kill somebody or shoot Dick Cheney? That would be bad.
It's not going to happen. You don't know where my guns are.
I just hope Molly doesn't know where your guns are.
No, she doesn't. I trust me on this. I'm not an irresponsible gun owner. And now I'm going to get emails from people who have toddlers, and they're going to say, Mike, you're making a big mistake. Trust me on this, truth seekers. You know, I've had five children and lots of guns, and I have grandchildren, and it's not going to happen.
Mommy, why does Daddy hate the squirrels? I like the squirrels.
Stop.
The squirrels are my friends. Is Daddy
Stop! Molly
squirrels?
Will never see me shoot a squirrel. Never. And I use an air rifle on them now anyway. I got caught so much flack a year or two ago because I used a .22 rifle. It was a lot of fun when I used a .30-06 because they would just... But, you know, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Does he hate the chipmunks too?
All right, thanks.
He won't kill Alvin, will he?
Thanks, Gabby.
Pressure's high just to stay alive. Cause the heat is on.
People who are going to commit crime shouldn't have guns.
Yeah, well, me too, George. Bush today reiterated his strong support for his Tejano, Alberto Gonzalez, the incompetent criminal attorney general who now runs the U.S. Department of Injustice. He said that Gonzalez's testimony on Capitol Hill last week had increased his confidence in him. See, this is bizarre world. This is backwards world, right? The filthier somebody conducts himself or herself in public regarding this Bush crime family, the more Bush loves it, because Bush is truly a sociopath. He's just absolutely a sociopath. There is no question. Meantime, the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, said that Gonzalez's failure to resign was, quote, no doubt bad for the Justice Department, end quote. Yeah, bad. I'd pick a different word, Arlen, but bad'll work, I guess. He said this on Fox News Sunday. Is that the one hosted by, what's his name, Wallace, Chris Wallace? Oh, God. of course, key Republicans in Washington now think that Gonzales ought to go, not because they believe that Gonzales did anything wrong. Oh, hell no. But he's getting too much attention as an evil, torture-loving son of a bitch that he is. That's the only reason Republicans want him gone. To a Republican, you're supposed to keep your filth private. If you're involved in torture, keep it private. If you're stealing stuff, keep it private. If you are having sex with children, keep it private. The crime, the sin to Republicans is getting caught. It's not the act itself, but the revelation of the act. So that's why these Republicans in Washington are all anti-Gonzales all of a sudden. Oh, bat squeeze. They love him. They're walking around in private, rending their garments and beating themselves with birch whips, saying, oh, God, we're going to lose a good one here, but I've got to go out in public and act like I want him gone. You evil bastards. Uncle Mike has you figured out to a T. But I digress. It's the Bush bastard we're talking about, not Gonzales. So last Thursday, and it took a while to get this audio, but he was in Tip City, Ohio. Yeah, there is a place named Tip City, Ohio, and he was at the Tip City High School, where he made some comments that, I don't know, rank right up there with the gibbering of a drunk chipmunk. But here he is on being the decider.
My job is a job to make decisions. I'm a decision, if the job description were what do you do, it's decision maker. And I make a lot of big ones and I make a lot of little ones. The first lesson about decision making is if you're short on a subject, ask for help. So if you're a student listening and you're not very good at math, ask for help. Don't be afraid to admit that you need help when it comes to, you know, life.
If you're short on a subject, ask for help. This is a Yale graduate? Don't be afraid to admit that you need help when it comes to life. Yeah, you're a decision. You make big ones and you make little ones. Yeah, thank God for you. On the floor covering in the Oval Office, you know, the rug. Now, here he goes. This is deep. This is deep.
I wasn't afraid to admit I wasn't sure how to design a rug, so I called Laura. I said, they've asked me to design a rug in the Oval Office. I don't know anything about rug designing. Will you help me? She said, of course. But I said, I wanted to say something. The president has got to be a strategic thinker. And I said to her, make sure the rug says optimistic person comes to work.
Oh, my God.
Because you can't make decisions unless you're optimistic that the decisions you make will lead to a better tomorrow. And so if you were to come in the Oval Office, what you would see is this fantastic rug that looks like the sun. And it just sets the tone for the Oval Office.
Yeah, it sets the tone. Yeah, it says, dim sun is sleeping. Shh, it's nappy time. Shh. The president, I wanted to say something. The president's got to be a strategic thinker. I can agree with that. What the hell are you doing there? And I said to her, make sure the rug says, optimistic person comes to work. I don't know, that sounds like a fortune cookie thingy, doesn't it? That little strip of paper in there? Too bad the rug in your office says, inept asshat sits here. There's something almost Zen sounding about this. And so if you were to come into the office, what you would see is this fantastic rug that looks like the sun. And it just sets the tone for the Oval Office. Nam Yoho Ringekyo. Okay, got it.
Each president designs his own rug. I've designed mine and is now being woven.
Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. Nam Myoho Renge Kyo.
But I do know what it one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now I don't claim to be.
they can say, we're only going to have a stimulus package, but let's forget tax relief, misunderestimate.
Brain damage. All right, 25 before the hour, back to Chucklenuts. He's in Tip City, Ohio, last Thursday, and he's explaining to the terminally faithful in the pre-screen and carefully selected audience, including, high school kids who were forced to stay in their rooms and watched on closed-circuit television. Only adults, I believe I got this right, only adults were allowed in the auditorium where he spoke. Well, you know, teenage mass killers and all that. So here he is on describing how difficult it is presidenting during war.
Nobody ought to ever hope to be a war president or a presidency during war. Death is terrible. Yeah. I believe we're going to succeed. I wouldn't ask families to have their troops there if I didn't think, one, it was necessary, and two, we could succeed. I'm optimistic we can succeed. Remember the rug?
Remember the rug? Oh, Jesus God, please kill me now. I'm optimistic we can succeed. I wouldn't ask families to have their troops there if I didn't think it was necessary and we can succeed. Yeah, but you are delusional. You are a delusional sociopath. And it's up to the American people at this point, George. It's not up to you any longer. You have shown that you can't commander-in-chiefly. You can't presidential. You know, you're a jackass. You're a halfwit. So it's up to the American people to decide how many more Americans we want to die. We decided we wanted 9 to die today, and that's how many died. Tomorrow, I don't know. It may be 1. It may be none. But it's up to the American people. It's not up to you. And every day, George, now we're going to choose how many Americans we want to die on that particular day. Here he is on this interesting war, and you people, some of you wonder why I call this son of a bitch a sociopath, on this interesting war and its expensive vehicles.
These are, I would call these times, consequential times. It's an interesting war, isn't it? By the way, every new phase of history has its own unique features to it. For example, you got a kid in the battlefield and he's emailing home every day. I mean, there's a lot of war, asymmetrical warfare with $50 weapons are sometimes used to defeat expensive vehicles.
You sick bastard. You sick son of a bitch. Standing there talking like you're talking about rotating corn crops with wheat or peanuts or soybeans. You evil, filthy, banal halfwit. Interesting war. You got a kid in the battlefield and he's emailing home every day. Jesus God, I am ashamed to be an American with this guy. Now, Man or Monkey took some questions from the audience. First guy asked, Mr. President, to kind of switch directions a little bit, illegal aliens in this country apparently are putting a lot of pressure on our social services. Could you comment on what the plans are in the future to take care of that?
A lot of folks are coming from Central America. But by the way, the reason why is because they want to put food on the table, and there are jobs Americans aren't doing. You know what I'm talking about. Some of you, if you're running a nursery, you know what I'm talking about. If you've got a chicken factory, a chicken plucking factory, or whatever you call them, you know what I'm talking about. And so these guys don't know what they're getting. Some card, it looks legal, sure, let's go work at my nursery. Or go pick my, you know, help me pick my lettuce.
Oh, Jesus God. Oh, my God.
I think you could file that one in under how not to court the Hispanic vote.
Oh, my God.
Go pick my lettuce.
Some of you, if you're running a nursery, you know what I'm talking about. Does he mean a child nursery or a tree nursery?
What's a chicken factory?
What's a chicken plucker?
Molly's going to ask me one day, Mommy, what's a chicken factory? Why does the president talk about chicken? Do you make chickens?
If you've got a chicken factory. Oh, my God. Oh, well, it's an interesting presidency, isn't it? Next audience member asks about military preparedness. Too bad Chucklenuts wasn't prepared for the question. Sounds like he thought it was about art? Art. Okay. The question from the town hall member goes like this. Mr. President, my question is about the U.S. military preparedness. I'm actually of a small manufacturing company in Dayton where we manufacture a lot of parts for the up-armored Humvees, gun turrets, and things like that. My question is about increasing that percentage and keeping a prepared military that we don't have to rely on other countries to defend ourselves.
My answer is, I'm really not sure what you're talking about, and I'll look into it. No, the term of art is called reset.
What?
That is to make sure that we reset our military.
Uh-huh.
And there is an area where there's good common ground.
What is he saying? I'm not really sure what you're talking about, and I'll look into it. And then this audience of cows and sheep laugh and applause, and then he says the term of art is called reset. Does anybody know what this evil son of a bitch is saying?
No, but I know I wish there was a reset button on the Oval Office, somewhere maybe near the sunny rug. Where
Be
we
careful
could,
now, Kathy.
I
need a producer. You know the NSA listens.
Reset the last 8 years.
Yeah.
Or six or 12.
Play that again. I just need to say that the question is about increasing military preparedness so that we don't have to rely on other countries to defend ourselves. Well, obviously the question makes no sense, but neither does the answer.
My answer is, I'm really not sure what you're talking about, and I'll look into it. No, the term of art is called reset.
A term of art?
And that is to make sure that we reset our military.
Reset our military.
And there is an area where there's good common ground.
I bet it was something in the art of war or something called reset, and he says the term of art, and he means, you know, but I'm sick of trying to figure out what he means.
Last question from Tip City, Ohio, this time on polls. You know, the question things, not the people who live in Poland, and you have to make that clear to this moron. Bush thinks the polls magically disappear. The question, Mr. President, I have to ask you personally with respect to economics, with respect to Iraq and immigration. When you go to bed at night and you see these polls, everybody and their brother does a poll now. How does it make you feel?
You know, I've been in politics long enough to know that polls just go poof, you know, at times. I mean, they're a moment. And everybody wants to be loved. I've never heard anybody say, I want to be despised. I'm running for office.
Oh, my God. These sheep and cows that are in there laughing and applauding him, they sound like the sheep and the cows that were down here in South Georgia. Remember that, Kathy, when he came to stump for a couple of candidates in Georgia and both of them lost? It's funny listening to this moron until you pause and realize that he is the figurehead in charge of the government, and that the people truly running this country, starting with Cheney, all they have to do is nudge this halfwit in any direction and off he goes. Then it's not funny. Some of us can still laugh. Can you still laugh, Truth Seeker? The rest of the world is coughing up blood over this rancid thug. But you and I can, we can still chuckle, can't we, huh? Listen to Bush. Oh, God, what a moron. In the meantime, more people are dying. I've never seen an administration so focused on death as this one. Maybe the Johnson or the Nixon administration came close. But this administration seems to revel in it. Nixon didn't care. Johnson was horrified. This guy seems to like it.
The elastic retreat swings the clothes of play. As the last wave uncovers the newfangled way. But you need to choose the one that the heat needs. And you sometimes rapidly feel. And your wise men don't know how it feels. To be thick as a brick. And the love that I feel. It's so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just hang.
Century, and there's universal approval of the statements I have made, and I'm confident there will be universal approval of the actions this government takes.
What? Oh, well. A couple of emails regarding a reset. Our senior correspondent, Chris, says, does that mean he hits a button and his toy soldiers come back to life so he can kill them all over again? Spitfire says, think Game Boy. Reset. And John in Las Vegas, Mike, can't listen tomorrow night because I have to pluck some chickens. It's my second job. You know what I'm talking about. George in Seattle, who I believe is a pagan. Mike, in regards to George Bush and his magic carpet, I normally would make a comment about pagan worship symbols and the like, but I won't bother because the guy is just plain nuts. Please, please, somebody impeach this deluded, dumb bastard before he says any more. My brain is baffled and my ears are starting to hurt. Yeah. All right, we have a few more, but I think I'll save them for next hour. Too much cappuccino, Perino. And does she end her sentences like this? Oh, does she? Okay.
Oh, she's talking really, really fast because she has to talk out of both sides of her mouth because there's so much information to cover today. So, like, she's really, really sped up today. I'm sorry. I don't know what it was. Maybe double cappuccino espressos. I have no idea.
From the Daily Telegraph, which is an Australian newspaper. I'm sure I could have gotten this from an American paper, but this is from Saturday. I think Saturday. I sound like her? The Vermont State Senate. Yeah, somebody sent this to me, but it's fun to get it out of the Australian press. The Vermont State Senate has passed a symbolic resolution calling on the U.S. Congress to impeach Bush, Cheney, over their handling of the unpopular Iraq War. The resolution, passed by a 16-9 vote, urges Vermont's representatives in D.C. to introduce a resolution in Congress requiring the U.S. House Judiciary Committee to start impeachment proceedings against Bush and Cheney. I don't know why it's symbolic. I thought it was constitutionally legal and correct and proper for the states to do this if members of Congress in the House would not. Oh, well. Well, if you're really disgusted with the first 2 hours of the program and you want to shake your mind free, I mean, you can do a chant, Nam Myoho Rinpoche, or I got a better idea. You've heard me mention this this website before. I like to go here when my mind is, like, really screwed up. Maybe I like to go here because I've got a 2.5-year-old kid. But it's fairywoodland.com. Fairy, F-A-I-R, fairywoodland.com. And the artist there, whose work you'll see when you get there, one of the two artists, John Crawford, is having a birthday today. And I just want you to know that not all is madness. If you have, and a lot of people are going to listen to this and go, Jesus, what's he talking about? If you have the guts or the courage, innocence, to look past the madness and look for the wee folk, the magic. Go from madness to magic. And you can spell that with a K if you want to. I, you know, really don't care. But if you can do that, look at some of these fairy houses. I know a lot of people say fairy house. That's a $500,000 high-rise in Midtown Atlanta. No, that's a different kind of fairy house. This is these are real fairy houses. Go to fairywoodland.com and just look. I'm not pushing anything here, but John Crawford, the one of the artists who is involved in this mystical art, it's his birthday today. I met him. I can't tell how old he is. John is either in his 50s or he's 700. One of the two. You can't be too sure about people, you know, especially people who build fairy houses. All right, what else we got? We have a break coming up here. When we come back, we have a few more sound bites on this Monday evening and your phone calls. We want you to hear the sound bites from Too Much Cappuccino Perino. It's just comic relief. You know, it's Monday, all right? So this is when we usually we try to find something funny because we're all not in that state of intense shell shock that we normally get to by Friday. We also have a quote here from Bush. He met with his top guy in Iraq today, Petraeus. I wonder if he asked him if he'd like to be the war czar. Anyway, he took a couple of questions from reporters. We just want to play one for you. And then one short comment from Torquemada Gonzalez, who is giving a briefing today on identity theft. You son of a bitch. Identity theft. All right, stick around, okay? Don't leave me here by myself. We'll come back after the news and whatever happens here at the top of the hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. the hour. An email from Ward in Japan, who talks here a little bit about Monkey Boy's pidgin English. Ward writes, Mike, I think the question about readiness was not was about not outsourcing weapons manufacturing. The question from the listener in Tip City. Monkey Brain's non-answer was about reset, which is just Pentagon jargon for replacing battle losses and worn-out equipment. Kathy is right. It is tiring having to translate from monkey pidgin English into regular English, especially when no one really knows monkey pidgin English because Bush makes it up as he goes along. Okay, then, here's how to feel better. One, open a new file in your computer. Two, name it George Bush. Three, send it to the trash. Four, empty the trash. Five, your PC will ask you, do you really want to get rid of George Bush? Six, firmly click yes. Seven, feel better.
Eight, repeat as needed.
Okay, I'm going to save that one. Do you really want to get rid of George Bush? Okay, let's move right along here very quickly. Too much cappuccino Perino from the briefing today. Here, Dana the Explainer had her motor mouth work cut out for her as she contorts around the barrage of questions ranging from the mystery of Bush's support for Abu Gonzalez to the nasty confrontation between Sheryl Crow and Turd Blossom at the Correspondence Center on Saturday night, to the war in Iraq and Harry Reid's firm stance, bless him, on calling a spade and a failed war. I thought too much cappuccino Perino's lips might drop off. But anyway, this reporter asks Spinderella about Torture Boy's disaster at the Senate hearing last Thursday. The question is, Dana, on March 14th, when the president first talked about Alberto Gonzalez, he said mistakes were made and he'll send the attorney general to Capitol Hill to correct those mistakes. Does the president feel like that's what the attorney general did last week?
We heard from the president this morning, and he said that the attorney general went to Congress after providing thousands of pages of documents and talking to them individually, but went to Congress and answered hours of testimony, and he answered as honestly as he could. And so, yes, the president thinks that he did the work that he needed to do.
I don't understand about that, because I felt what the president's point was, Alberto Gonzalez had to be able to sort of make it right with Congress to regain the faith and the trust up on the Hill. And if you take a look at Republican senators, so it's not politics as usual, Republican senators, he didn't do that.
I think there's no doubt that there are some people who don't support the Attorney General, but you heard the President today. He does.
Here's a fun follow-up to that last question. Doesn't Bush seem rather out of touch, saying he has even more confidence in Torquemada after that ridiculous performance in the Senate last week? What does that say about Chuckle-Nuts' ability to honestly judge his own staff? The reporter asks the neutron blonde, Dana, the fact of the matter is that after the testimony, you could call all over this town, and I'm not just talking about the John Stewarts of the world, the late-night comics, I'm talking about Republican senators and congressmen and women who are saying, you know what? The attorney general has no credibility. He did a lousy job on Capitol Hill yesterday. And now the president seems to be the only one saying, you know what? He's doing a fantastic job. Better than ever.
There were several types of questions that the attorney general could not answer with a yes or a no because he didn't recall. And I think that's what the president meant. That's what I mean now.
Now, there were about 64 variations, according to some accounts in the media, 64 variations of I don't recall, I don't remember. So what about that testimony in which he said, I don't recall, some variations, 64 times, that made the president say he now has increased confidence in the attorney?
Look, Ed, I think that you had testimony that lasted, I don't know how many hours, over 7 hours. And so many of those questions were repeated over and over. And the attorney general, who is an honorable and honest man, answered truthfully.
The questions were repeated over and over, sweetheart, because he's lied so many times. The senators wanted to know which time in his five or six changing recollections in the last few weeks, which time was he telling the truth, Dana? That's why they kept asking him. Oh, my God. Oh, never mind. On the standoff between Bush and, well, everyone else on the continued open-ended funding of his illegal war, this crack White House reporter asks Legally Blonde, Dana, in an effort to get this legislation the president wants, does the president believe the tone is appropriate here? Sharp words from this podium aimed at Democrats? Sharp words from Senator Reid about denial and losing the war? Can that help get anything done?
Well, look, far be it from us to let us be whack-a-mole and get whacked about the head and not respond. I mean, we're going to respond because it's important for the American people to understand that where we are coming from, and I don't think that sharp words should be mistaken for impassioned. It should not be mistaken for what it really is. We're not questioning someone's patriotism. We are trying to point out a debate on the merits. And I think that sometimes it takes harsher language to do that. Then we'll do so.
Whack-a-mole. Oh, for Christ's sake! Okay, stop right here. I mean, are you totally mental, Harry Reid? Can just bite my whack-a-mole. Whatever. The only tone I ever want to change is the ringtone of my Motorola. Have you heard the new one from Matchbox 20? It's like totally random. You do that better than I do it.
And whack-a-mole, I think they have that at the mall. You know, whack-a-mole, when you get the little tickets, then you can trade them in for things. And I tried to trade them in for peroxide one time, but they wouldn't let me because I was at the store across the hall, and they didn't have anything except the little cheap rhinestone earrings that my cat used to wear in her collar. But I don't.
On this insane Hitlerian idea to wall off parts of Baghdad. Let's see. In Warsaw, that was called the Warsaw Ghetto. In the occupied territories, it's called a wall to I don't know what. A wall like this is really not a good idea unless you're first century Rome. Or maybe, I don't know, when did the Great Wall of China get built to stop the Mongol horde? But the idea of building a wall in Baghdad? Maliki doesn't think this is a good idea either. So I understand that today they decided to halt the wall. It's not exactly going to win the hearts and minds of the innocent civilians to, imprison them in ghettos. And that nasty Harry Reid says we've lost the war in Iraq. Oh, bat squeeze. Reporter asks Buffy the Truth Slayer, Dana, what can you tell us about Prime Minister Maliki not wanting to have the wall around Baghdad? He says it's not necessary, but I thought it was supposed to be, for security.
Our commanders on the ground have a lot of flexibility, and they work with the Iraqis to try to figure out the best way to protect the men, women, and children of Iraq. And these walls were meant as a temporary measure in order to help prevent suicide bombers and kidnappers and others who would perpetrate sectarian violence from killing innocent people. What everybody wants and the president believes is an inherent desire in every person is the freedom to live their lives the way that they would like to live them.
Freedom. Let's see. Ignorance equals strength. Walls equal freedom. Okay. The president believes an inherent desire in every person is the freedom to live their lives the way they like to live them. That's why we're going to build walls around them. I see. Perhaps, Dana, we should leave now before we make any more of them dead. Walled cities. I guess that's what a ghoul like Cheney would consider progress. Right? The best way to protect men, women, and children of Iraq would be for us to leave, don't you think? Now, Tom Ridge suggested swaddling everyone in duct tape and saran wrap. But, he was voted down. I don't know. But that didn't fly the last time. I don't think it's going to work this time. But, Maliki, and we're going to build walls because, we're here to protect the people. And the President of the United States believes in the sanctity of life. And oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But I swear, retainer, that's going to be really like a total bummer. I'm freaking out. I'm sure. Like, those things that, stick in your mouth are so gross. You got saliva all over them. But, I don't know, it's going to be cool, if I can, see my smile. It'll be, really cool. Except my, teeth are, too small. But no biggie. So awesome. It's, tubular, Well, I'm not, really ugly or anything. It's just, I don't know.
one past the hour. Adamant. Woo!
Like, I was really totally like, I think the Duran Duran, you know, but, you know, I guess it's all copyrighted and stuff because I really couldn't find anything. And I love Simon Le Bon. My God, his hair was so cool and his lips. You know, like, before there were collagen injections, there was Simon Le Bon. Everybody was, like, so totally obsessed. They were radical. I'm
Tomorrow, Tuesday at noon, the, what is this? Cannon Terrace, intersection of Independence Avenue and New Jersey Avenue in Washington, D.C., Congressman Dennis Kucinich will hold a press conference to announce introduction of articles of impeachment relating to Vice President Richard Dick Cheney. You can get more information here by going to afterdowningstreet.org. Really? I wonder if the media, do you think the media will cover this? Huh? Is that right? Okay. Tomorrow, Tuesday, April 24th. Let's see what happens. All right. Very quickly here. President Bush meets with General Petraeus. President Bush meets with General Petraeus. That sounds like it could be a Broadway review. After Bush met with his top guy in Iraq, and I do wonder if he asked him if he'd like to be the war czar, he took a couple of questions from reporters. Now, of course, they're not going to talk about General Petraeus or the slaughter going on in Iraq. Why bother? But Abu Gonzalez, that's something else again. Reporter says, Mr. President, Attorney General is still getting a lot of criticism over the U.S. attorney situation. The firing, was his explanation sufficient? Or is there more he needs to do to try to turn things around?
The Attorney General went up and gave a very candid assessment and answered every question he could possibly answer, honestly answer, in a way that increased my confidence in his ability to do the job. One of the things that's important for the American people to understand is that the Attorney General has a right to recommend to me to replace U.S. attorneys. U.S. attorneys serve at the pleasure of the president.
Really?
In other words, we have named them, and I have the right to replace them with somebody else.
Oh.
And as the investigation or the hearings went forward, it was clear that the Attorney General broke no law.
Oh.
Did no wrongdoing. And some senators didn't like his explanation, but he answered as honestly as he could. And this is an honest, honorable man in whom I have confidence.
Uh-huh. Well, by Bush crime family standards, I have no argument with what you're saying. He says, the Attorney General has a right to recommend to me to replace U.S. attorneys, even though, of course, it happened the other way around. Rove told Gonzalez who to fire. And he fired first and tried to trump up an excuse to justify it later. But see, George really does think that he's the decider, that he's in control. Oh. So, after saying, I don't recall, for 7 hours, you see, that's considered honest in Bush world. And Bush says, that increased my confidence in his ability to do the job. That's because Gonzalez obstructs justice and hides the truth so handily. What a maestro. Heck of a job deceiving those senators. Except, oops, they didn't buy it. And you can imagine Bush thinking this, thank God the media isn't touching this story or my little Deanna would be in big trouble. Have you noticed, truth seekers? Have you noticed it's absent from the newscast, from everywhere? It's like it didn't happen. It never happened unless you watched C-SPAN 3 for 7 hours last week or listened to this program for 3. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. Honest to Christ, it didn't happen. It never happened. What are you people asking? What are you reporters asking about? I mean, really, my goodness, and nothing ever happened. Why would anything happen? What do you? The president has increased confidence in his attorney general because attorney generals have a right to serve the pleasure of the president, and everybody knows that that's the way it goes. And I don't understand what you all are talking about. Nothing happened. There was nothing. There was no hearing. Nobody said anything. Nobody did anything. Nobody did anything. Nobody said anything. Nobody moved. Nobody sat. Nobody died.
As the investigation, the hearings went forward, it was clear that the Attorney General broke no law, did no wrongdoing. And some senators didn't like his explanation, but he answered as honestly as he could.
I love that. He answered as honestly as he could. Oh, my God. He answered as honestly as he could. All right, last one. This is Torquemada Gonzalez, Abu Gonzalez himself, at a briefing today on identity theft. You see, Rove decides that Torture Boy needs a little positive PR, and what could be more positive than protecting our children from porn and protecting our credit ratings from being ripped off by evil people in Nigeria? I don't know. So Torture Boy is sent out to face the cameras today to prove he wasn't going to shrink from the mounting calls from everybody but Bush to fire his useless ass. And then came the questions. Did they ask about identity theft? Well, no. They sure didn't. This crack White House reporter or whatever says, Mr. Attorney General, you lost the confidence of a lot of people on Capitol Hill last week. Virtually nobody's defended you. At the Department of Justice, morale is plummeting among prosecutors and U.S. attorneys. My question for you, sir, it seems like you are disagreeing with me as you're standing there shaking your head, but my question is, do you acknowledge that your continued leadership at the Department of Justice could harm its operations at such an important time when the department is trying to keep us all, you know, like, safe?
You've lost the confidence of a lot of people on Capitol Hill where virtually nobody's defended you. At the Department of Justice, morale, by all accounts, is plummeting amongst career prosecutors and U.S. attorneys. My question for you, sir, you seem like you're disagreeing with me.
I just said this.
But my question is, do you acknowledge that your continued leadership at the Department of Justice could harm or hurt its operations at such an important time when the department is trying to keep us all safe?
Of course, it's something that I always take into consideration. I think a cabinet secretary or the head of an agency every day should wake up and ask themselves that question. Am I still effective in this position? I think that's a question that all of us should ask every day. And as long as I think that I can be effective, uh-huh, and the president believes that I should continue to be at the head of the Department of Justice, I'll continue serving.
Oh, God, let me beat my head against the pavement. I'm sorry to repeat what the crack reporter said, but you know, what the hell. Well, I don't know, truth seekers, but I've just about had enough tonight. How about you? Shall we end the program right now, or should we take phone calls? May I see some hands, please? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm sorry. I didn't make that clear enough. All those in favor of ending the program now, because we've had enough of this crap, raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. All right, all those in favor of continuing, and let's take some phone calls, raise your hands. Okay, we'll take some phone calls. All right, here we go. Let's start with Sarge, who's called from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program. You've been holding on since we first started tonight.
Woo! Well, I'm really glad because my dog actually chewed my line into my internet, and so I'm without internet tonight. So
oh, my God.
I was kind of glad.
Your dog chewed the... Okay,
well,
Sarge.
Well, that's okay, Mike. I'm only a week longer in this town, and I'm out of here.
You're leaving Mississippi?
Yeah, and I want to thank everybody who's made this possible. Thank you so much, everybody. I'm going to try and answer each and every one of you personally.
Where are you going, Sarge?
Phoenix.
Oh, you're going to Phoenix. All right.
I will be arriving in Phoenix May 4th.
Yeah?
And I'm going to be there for the silent auction and dinner that we'll be having, where Jim Yancey will be speaking. And the fine people out at KPHX in Phoenix have done so much, and they just haven't stopped. And I'll be doing my show live from Phoenix that day, my first live show.
Oh, that's right. You're going to have a program on KPHX, right?
Well, actually, I already have one. It started Sunday, yesterday.
Oh, really? How'd it go?
Well, other than the host, it was a great show. If they'd had a good host, they would have had it made. But Jim Yancey was on, and this guy, Spencer Smith, that lives in Bay St. Louis, was on. And it was just really remarkable, some of the things that these people were telling. And I hope everyone will tune in, because we're really going to make Haley Barber squirm.
Well, that's good. Now, when is your program on KPHX?
Okay, it'll be on KPHX for 30 minutes, and then all of it's carried on Nova M Radio Network.
And what time?
It'll be at 7 a.m. on Sunday mornings.
All right, that's
it'll be 10 your time, 9 Central.
8 Mountain.
8 Mountain and blah, blah, blah.
And 7 Pacific.
And I am just really excited about it. Like I said, the guests are the main part of it, and the people are the ones that's going to benefit, who are suffering from this crime that's going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really glad that this opportunity availed itself. And I also have a deep appreciation for you and Kathy. You guys, you are consummate professionals.
Well, okay. Thanks, Sarge. I hope it works well, and I hope you're going to like Phoenix. You know, it's a lot different from Mississippi Coast.
Well, you know, the people down here have gotten so horrible. I mean, this is like living in the White House with George Bush
down here.
It really is that horrible, and so I'm really excited about getting out of here.
Well, let me just give you one clue. In Phoenix, Arizona, Sarge, they don't have any water.
Well, they don't have any hurricanes either.
Well, that's true. But there's no water. You have to learn how to drink sand.
Okay.
Well, good luck, Sarge. Stay in touch, all right?
Yeah, and thanks again, everybody. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care. Take care. No, Phoenix does have water. They really do. It's just I've tasted bad water before, but oh my God. It's just I don't know how y'all do it. I really don't.
It can't be worse than Edisto Island off South Carolina, where we stayed that
That was
week.
Bad. Yeah, that was we were dodging a hurricane. That was bad water. The water down at East Point, Florida, is bad water.
Well, it's better since they closed the paper mill.
But Phoenix, Arizona, unless I was just in a bad area, I don't know. It seemed to me the water would be the water, though. But the water in Phoenix, I don't know. Leonard is calling from Glendale, Arizona. Hey, Leonard.
Hey, good to hear you there, Mr. Moy. Thanks for letting me call in.
Sure.
Hey, it's good to hear, Sarge, and I'm down here really in the Phoenix metro area in Glendale, and I look forward to it because he's going to be able to do a lot more good for those people down there. There's a lot of great people down here in Phoenix, and they want to help. But I was just mainly calling in to say that I heard on news here earlier on the radio station here that there's a soldier in Afghanistan who is saying quite rightly, in my belief, that they're flying the flag half-mast, and they should, for the students that were killed in Virginia, but why aren't they flying them every day when my fellow American soldiers are killed? And I just really thank you for giving strength to my fellow soldiers out there, because I'm sometimes there's a lot of mean words, a lot of things. I'm guilty of it myself, because I just see a lot of, when you see your friends being killed for no good reason,
right,
you know, and I've just seen some people that I know I don't know personally on the internet and other places, you know, starting to blame some of the my fellow soldiers. They're saying that you can't be a liberal and be against the war and also support the troops. They're saying that the troops are also guilty of not laying down their weapons. I do advocate, I'm saying openly right now, that my fellow soldiers are in a tough position here to ask them, if you're a medic and you say, don't go to Iraq, and you know they're going to say, well, you could have been there to help save the next guy whose leg was blown off with a tourniquet. You know what I'm saying? But there are people out there saying that, and I just want them to know, you know, my fellow soldiers, we're in a position, we feel like we're being used like a bunch of suckers, you know. We're basically expected to be cannon fodder and worthless, expendable items, GI, general issue, and it just kind of hurts. I've got people out there sometimes saying that soldiers are, it's our fault, and it's not always our fault. Yes, I really respect Lieutenant Watata, but I just want to thank you. I got to see you when you came out to the great party in Phoenix, and I want to thank all the listeners for giving me strength and putting the message out there to the rest of America that don't blame the American soldiers. Blame the criminal that's in charge, and there's other ways, you know, because if you're still paying tax dollars to support this war indirectly, then it's easy to, you know, point your finger at my fellow soldiers. I just encourage them to do their best to, if they don't want to go to Iraq, I encourage them not to do that and to protest that way. But to tell a soldier that's over in Iraq right now, hey, you can't go out with your platoon and you've got to protest that way, that's like telling me I can't go out and watch my family. They need my protection. So anyways, I'm ranting. Thanks a lot, Mr. Malloy, and it was just a real honor to see you. Everybody was so happy to see you out here. So you have a good one. Thank you and your wife there and your little girl. The best to all of you.
Thanks, Leonard. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care.
Soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore.
Ten before the hour. All right, this is triple X rated insofar as language is concerned. I'm going to try to clean it up as best I can, but you need to hear this. This comes from a very reliable source, Sheila, who sent it to me. This is from Craigslist.org. It's a letter from an angry soldier. Hold on. I'm having the worst damn week of my whole life, so I'm going to write this while I'm pissed off enough to do it right. I am sick of all this BS people are writing about the Iraq War. I am abso-blanking-lutely sick to death of it. What the F do most of you know about it? You watch it on TV and read the commentaries in the newspaper or Newsweek or whatever GD yuppie news rag you subscribe to and think you're all such effing experts that you can scream at each other like five-year-olds about whether you're right or not. Let me tell you something. Unless you've been there, you don't know a GD thing about it. If you haven't been shot at in that effing hellhole, shut the F up. How do I dare say this to you moronic war supporters who are supporting our troops and waving the flag and all that happy horse blank? I'll tell you why. I'm a Marine, and I served my tour in Iraq. My husband, also a Marine, served several. I left the service 6 months ago because I got pregnant while he was home on leave, and 3 days ago I get a visit from two men in uniform who hand me a letter and tell me my husband died in that effing festering sandpit. He should have been home a month ago, but they extended his tour, and now he's coming home in a box. You effers in that GD lying sack of blank they call a president are the reason my husband will never see his baby, and my kid will never meet his dad. And you know what the most effed up thing about this Iraq blank is? They don't want us there. They're not happy we came, and they want us out now. We effed up their lives even worse than they already were, and they're pissed off. We didn't help them, and we're not helping them now. That's what our soldiers are dying for. Oh, and while I'm good and worked up, the government doesn't even have the decency to help out the soldiers whose lives they've ruined. If you really believe the military and the government had no idea the veterans' hospitals were so effed up, you're a GD retard. They don't care about us. We're disposable. We're numbers on a page, and they'd rather forget we exist so they don't have to be reminded about the families and lives they ruined while they're sipping their cocktails at another fundraiser dinner. If they were all really concerned about supporting the troops, they'd bring them home so their families wouldn't have to cry at a graveside and explain to their children why mommy or daddy isn't coming home. Because you can't explain it. We're not fighting for our country. We're not fighting for the good of Iraq's people. We're fighting for Bush's personal agenda. Patriotism, my ass. You know what? My dad served in Vietnam, and nothing has changed. So I'm pissed. I'm beyond pissed. And I'm going to go to my husband's funeral and receive that flag and hang it up on the wall for my baby to see when he's older. But I'm not going to tell him that his father died for the stupidity of the American government. I'm going to tell him that his father was a hero and the best man I ever met, and that he loved his country enough to die for it, because that's all true, and nothing will be solved by telling my son that his father was sent to die by people who didn't care about him at all. F you, war supporters, George W. Bush, and all the GDMFers who made the war possible. I hope you burn in hell. That's a letter from, it's at Craigslist, from a woman who, and I trust my source on this, a woman who served in the Marine Corps in Vietnam, or in Iraq, and whose husband is dead. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program for us tonight at KPHX in Phoenix. He also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Thanks to Mark Marshall, who is our webmaster and the moderators at MikeMulloy.com on the message board. And I want you to hear some music by Mark Marshall. Go to MarkMarshall.com for information about his CD, New Eye. It's now available on iTunes and Napster. And also want you to go to NovaMradio.com, and if you're inclined, sign up for downloads and podcasts and a chance to win. I can't believe we're not at 5,000 yet, but that's the way it goes, I guess. Also, thanks to Catherine Bay, who's the executive producer of this program. Rich is calling from Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Rich, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. That was really powerful, that letter. It just left me speechless. Like,
oh, me too.
Mike, long time no talk. The last time we talked was Molly was just over a month old. It was right before the Republican Nutball Convention in New York City. And I told you then, and nothing has changed my opinion now, George Bush is a drunk. They're covering up for him. He's a drunk, a drug addict, and a sociopath. And every member of the Bush crime family is at least one of those things or more. Barbara Bush had the nerve to say today, okay, on the CNN political ticker, there was a link to it on Huffington Post, that Mitt Romney was a wild guy, like Mormons were real wild back until 1897 when they couldn't do bigamy anymore. And then she went on to say, and I quote, that there are wild people in many religions. A lot of Christians are wild people, too. A lot of Jewish people are wild people, too. And a lot of Muslim wild people. What she neglected to say is that every member of the Bush crime family is a drunk, a drug addict, a sociopath, or a psychopath, including her. And they're the most insane and dangerous and wild people on the planet, and we must remove them. And thank you for being there, Mike.
All right. Well, I appreciate you checking in, Rich.
I hope not.
Oh, what? Okay, well, thanks, Rich. That was a quick exit. I'm like Rich. I'm just still reeling from the letter from the woman, angry Marine. Yikes. Well, I hate to leave you with a bummer, truth seekers, but, you know, we're in Bush world, so Greg Palast will be on the program tomorrow night, so I'll see you then. Take care. Have a nice evening. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the NOVAM Radio Network.